The rebels who seized the Congolese town of Goma earlier this week now say they'll march on the capital, Kinshasa, if President Kabila fails to start immediate peace talks. He, on the other hand, says he'll only talk with the authorities in neighbouring Rwanda, which is widely believed to be backing the rebels. This morning, fresh attempts are underway to resolve the crisis, with representatives of 11 African countries holding a summit in Uganda. Gabriel Gatehouse says the week's events have not reflected well on the United Nations personnel charged with keeping the peace in eastern Congo.
Darkness was falling as we approached Goma, still then in government hands. We could see the stark outline of Mount Nyiragongo towering over the city. The crater of the volcano glowed red in the gloom. It seemed an ominous sign. As I write this now, Goma has fallen. There are rebel soldiers strolling around the grounds of our hotel, their rifles slung nonchalantly over their shoulders. This is a tranquil spot, the waters of Lake Kivu lapping against the terrace. But there is still fighting going on to the west of here. There's talk of a government counterattack. This rebellion isn't over. The rebel ranks consist mostly of mutinous soldiers from the regular Congolese army. They deserted in the spring and set up bases in the jungle-covered hills where the Democratic Republic of Congo borders Rwanda and Uganda. In 6 months, they've fought their way slowly back south towards Goma, the capital of this mineral-rich region. Their numbers are thought to be small, between 2,000 and 3,000 men. And yet, neither the Congolese army nor the UN peacekeepers could hold them off. Tuesday morning had started with a firefight on the outskirts of the city. The streets were deserted. We knew the rebels were at the gates of Goma, but we didn't know who held the airport. We drove cautiously past two army tanks parked on a roundabout. We passed a few regular soldiers. One of them waved. He seemed relaxed. Then the skies opened. As we inched our way forward, we saw a column of men approaching through the tropical downpour. We stopped. The only sounds were the battering of the raindrops and the frantic clunk, clunk of the windscreen wipers. Our driver peered ahead. "Those aren't army soldiers," he said. "Those are rebels." Moments later, both sides opened fire. The bullets cracked and whizzed around us as we raced back in the direction from which we'd come. By the time the rebels entered the city centre several hours later, the army had fled. The UN soldiers, part of the largest peacekeeping mission in the world, simply watched as the rebels marched past their white armoured vehicles and took a victory lap around the town. I spoke later that day to a senior UN official who looked close to tears. There was sadness there, but frustration as well in equal measure. They had been dealt an impossible hand, fighting alongside an ill-disciplined Congolese army against a surprisingly well-trained and well-equipped enemy. Once the rebels entered town, their mandate to protect civilian life effectively rendered them impotent. The following day, the rebel leadership summoned the people of Goma to the city stadium. Policemen lined up to hand over their weapons. A colonel took to the microphone and promised order and stability, an end to corruption and terrible infrastructure. He also vowed to continue the fight. "Do you want us to stop here?" he thundered, "or should we carry on?" The stadium roared its approval. But the cheers from the crowd sounded as hollow as the colonel's promises. No one in Goma seriously believes this movement, which calls itself M23, is going to improve the atrocious pothole-ridden roads of eastern Congo. And most civilians know full well that the only people who will gain from this war between military factions are the armed groups themselves, the people who deal in the mineral and state resources they control, and the politicians, Congolese and foreign, who pull the strings. People in this part of the world have learnt to expect no protection from a man with a gun, not even if he's wearing a blue helmet. Once things had settled down, I did something I've been wanting to do ever since I first came to Congo. Look left as you drive along the airport road, and you'll see the maggot-eaten carcasses of three derelict aeroplanes. In the morning light, with the looming volcano as a backdrop, it's a surreal and stunning view. One has sunk backwards into a ditch, making it appear frozen in an eternally aborted takeoff. It feels like a metaphor for a rich and beautiful country, a country of unfulfilled potential. I wanted to photograph it. The last time we'd tried to film at the airport, we'd been arrested by the Congolese army. The officer who detained us was, according to his name tag, called Adolf Hitler. He was aggressive and deeply unpleasant. Hitler isn't there anymore. The UN peacekeepers still are, and they are now supposed to be in charge. We clambered up an embankment to one of their positions to get a better view. No, said the Uruguayan officer in the blue helmet, you can't come up here. I'm afraid I ignored him. I thought it unlikely he would physically restrain me, and I was right. As I took my pictures, I wondered what chance there had ever been for the people of Goma, who'd hoped that these troops would stand between them and the men with the guns.
That's Gabriel Gatehouse in the Democratic Republic of Congo.